It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Keep those pledges coming. Thanks so much for your support. Today we have Henry Louis Gates. We have our brand new Chris Christie beat reporter, Matt Katz. We'll talk about why the Star Ledger endorsement of Christie sounded so much like an unendorsement, but we'll get to that. And we have our first guest, the Emmy-winning political commentator and author Jeff Greenfield. He has a new alternative history book called If Kennedy Lived, the First and Second Terms of President John F. Kennedy. We'll do some alternative history and some current political analysis with him, which he has done so many times and so well for us. So hi, Jeff Greenfield. Welcome back to WNYC.
A pleasure.
You were a speechwriter for Robert Kennedy for a time, weren't
you? Yes, in the last year of his life, I was.
So was he already not Attorney General
this
and
was
running
in the Senate,
for president?
Right. He was, well,
oh, Senator
he
from
was
New
in
York.
The Senate, and this being a very different era, he didn't announce his candidacy for president until March 16th of 1968.
The year he was running.
Yeah, which was not uncommon. So
it would mean that he missed the first 17 or 18 CNN debates.
Well, you could either say luckily or otherwise, since there was no cable news back then, and debates were relatively new. The only debate he had was with Gene McCarthy a few days before the California primary.
Did you know President Kennedy at all?
No. That was a little before my time.
Before we get into the details, why write an alternate history? Is it just fun, or can we learn anything important about who we are?
I think the latter in a couple of critical ways, because a lot of historians disdain this. They think it's a parlor game. But I think it's actually gotten a little more respectability in recent times for two reasons. The first thing it does is it teaches you humility, in my view, because the alternative history that works for me is when tiny little events, small twists of fate, lead to enormous consequences. So it's not like a science fiction thing where Hitler invents the laser beam or somebody goes back in time. Or as historians will put it, Spartacus has a jet. It's things like, in my last book, a suicide bomber stalking President-elect Kennedy, and only because his wife comes to the door does he not detonate a car bomb that would have killed Kennedy.
That was true.
That was true.
The first assassination attempt,
yes,
and which failed. People don't remember that.
It was every time I went out to talk about Then Everything Changed, which I talked about with you, people would say, did you make that up? Or biographers never heard of it. But look how tiny that was. In this current book, if the rain had not stopped very late in the morning in Dallas, the bubble top would have stayed on his car. And Oswald, and by the way, just to clear the decks, I do think it was Oswald, and I don't think there was anyone else. The percentages of him being able to kill Kennedy would have drastically lessened. It's things like that. The other thing is, if you reject this idea, this deterministic view of history, whatever happened was all that could have happened, which I frankly think is it just defies common sense. Think of your own life. If you hadn't gone to that party, you might not have met your life partner.
Mm-hmm.
But it tells you what character traits in a leader, for instance, at certain times matter a huge amount. John Kennedy's skepticism, his obsession with not miscalculating or not being misinformed, his hesitancy to leap, probably, in my view, averted disaster in the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was also much more temperate and timid almost about things like great domestic achievement, so I don't believe we would have had a great society. That's why alternate history is my thing.
Jeff Greenfield, his new book, If Kennedy Lived, the First and Second Terms of President John F. Kennedy. Obviously, the occasion is the 50th anniversary of the assassination, which is next month. One shocker in the book, you suggest Kennedy might have dropped Lyndon Johnson as his running mate for the reelection campaign in 1964.
Yep.
Why would he have done that?
As Robert Caro spells out in great precision in his latest book,
biography of LBJ,
the very day John Kennedy was shot, the very moment, there were two investigations going on. One in the Senate, in which a witness was bringing proof that Johnson had taken kickbacks in return for buying an insurance policy. Second, by Life magazine, that was about to launch a huge investigation as to how this lifelong public servant had a net worth of $14 million, the answers of which did not reflect at all well on Lyndon Johnson's honesty. Because of what really happened, the moment Kennedy was shot, those investigations were derailed. Nobody wanted to shock an already traumatized nation.
That would be a difference from America today, I would imagine that the fact that he was headed for even higher office, the presidency itself, would have drawn out those arrows if they were there to be fired.
Well, in the alternate history, it's not at all clear what would have happened if Kennedy had lived and Johnson tried to win in 68. He was not particularly well. But my point is, if Kennedy survives Dallas, Life magazine and a Senate committee are saying, wait a minute, we've got a potential crook, a heartbeat from the White House. We almost had him as president. We're not only not going to drop this investigation, we're going to accelerate it. And you add to that the notion that maybe Johnson was no longer a help. Maybe the South would have been lost with a Goldwater candidacy, and Kennedy would have had to have looked elsewhere, the Northeast, the Midwest. That plus the very real notion of Lyndon Johnson being subject to withering attacks on his honesty. Yes, in my alternate history, he does not stay on the ticket, and we go a year without a vice president.
Questions for Jeff Greenfield on his alternate history, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What have you ever wondered about that might have been different if JFK had lived? And we'll get into a little contemporary political analysis, too, if you want to call up with a question about that, 212-433-9692. To my eye, maybe the most important alternative is that you suggest JFK would have ended the Vietnam War early in his second term. Of course, in real life, LBJ escalated the war. Why think Kennedy would have been different?
We're talking here about probabilities. I hope everybody realizes that I am not Carswell the Magnificent. But if you look at – this is as briefly as I can, Brian. Kennedy ran as a hawk. He had very militant anti-communist rhetoric, a bipolar view of the world, but was always skeptical about foreign military entanglements. He did increase the number of American advisors. He was I don't mean this in a legal way. He was essentially buying off the military, who wanted him to do much more. But if you move now to 1963, he's been through the Cuban Missile Crisis, which – drastically changed him. He has made a speech in June of 63, a remarkable speech for the time, in which he's basically saying the Cold War framework has to be stopped. And he's learned not to trust his military when they confidently tell him what military force can do. And going all the way back to the French effort to keep Vietnam, he believed that nationalism was this powerful emerging force in the world. And he wasn't at all sure that the United States would be any more successful than the French had been. And again, this is the part of John Kennedy that I think looks better in recent times. He was saying all the time, we don't know enough. You can think about the Iraq War if you want and see mm-hmm. how relevant this is. We really don't know enough about what we're up to. We don't know how much the Vietnamese are willing – the Viet Minh, the Viet Cong, the communists are willing to sacrifice. It turns out Ho Chi Minh was willing to lose, which he did, a million or more.
And LBJ wasn't asking those questions?
2 days after Kennedy's death, Lyndon Johnson told one of his aides, I will not be the first American president to lose a war. Johnson
different mindset.
Much better on domestic policy, understood the Congress. I don't think Kennedy could possibly have gotten Johnson's domestic agenda through. But Johnson didn't care that much about the world. He framed it in legislative terms. The passions that drove a Ho Chi Minh to lose as many people over as much time as necessary didn't occur to him. And he trusted the military much more than Jack Kennedy did.
So with the difference on domestic policy, do you think we wouldn't have Medicare and Medicaid today?
Medicare probably we would have, because that had been such a goal of every Democrat that I think, assuming Kennedy's reelection, which I think you do, he probably could have gotten that through.
Health care for the elderly.
The two issues there, I think we would have been different. I don't know that he could have gotten the Civil Rights Act of 1964 through.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, Richard Russell, the segregationist senator from Georgia, the leader of the opposition, said afterwards, we could have beaten John Kennedy on civil rights. We couldn't have beaten Lyndon Johnson. So flip it.
Because Johnson was a Southerner?
Because he understood the Senate. Because he knew how to drive that. Because he knew how to work with Ev Dirksen and the Republicans. And remember, Johnson had the martyr John Kennedy as a lever, of sorts to get that through. I mean, this was the memorial to Jack Kennedy, and he'd won a landslide reelection. I think Kennedy's focus was so much more on the world. One of his only black advisor said to Jack Kennedy, "You care more about Germany than Alabama," and it was true. You know, look at the first inaugural. There's one half of one sentence about America. And my feeling is that I think we would have had a Voting Rights Act eventually, because that issue, and you'll forgive the unintended pun, is so black and white that it's really hard to defend not letting people vote, even if you're a segregationist.
But you write that Kennedy would have gotten there in a different way than Johnson.
Well, I've used literary license actually in my book, and this was, you know, you got to have some fun with this.
Yes.
Ex-Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who's gone back to Texas to run his alma mater and has kind of calls Kennedy and says, "I got some advice for you. Use the Voting Rights Act. Make it an issue of patriotism. Make it an issue of all those blacks who served in our wars and now can't vote." But that's my literary device. But I think we would not have had a great society because John Kennedy didn't think that way. The very temperate notions that he brought, say, to foreign policy, he brought to domestic policy. I don't think Johnson saw himself as a second FDR. He wanted to think grandiose thoughts. Kennedy, I think we would have had, let's raise the minimum wage a little. Let's have industrial development. Let's have Medicare. But I think if somebody came to him and said, "Let's do a great society," he'd say, "No, that's too much."
Another huge thing. You suggest that if Kennedy had lived, we would still have had the counterculture of the 1960s,
yes,
but without some of its darkest undercurrents.
Correct. And this was the most fascinating part to me. I actually interviewed many of the leaders of the New Left, Tom Hayden and Todd Gitlin and others. And to a person, they say if Kennedy had lived and had not escalated the Vietnam War, what you would have had is, I'll use George Bush's, the first Bush's, you would have had a kinder, gentler counterculture. You would have had, I think you would have had sex, drugs, and rock and roll because they are three very attractive pastimes. But you wouldn't have had flag burning. You wouldn't have had the notion that America was this malevolent, Moloch of a imperialist power.
Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
Because there wasn't a shooting war in Vietnam to work off. I mean, you have to go back and remember that in 1964, SDS endorsed Lyndon Johnson for reelection. They were, as Tom Hayden told me, reformist to the core. It was the Vietnam War and the Kennedy assassination. This is an important part. The feeling after Kennedy's death was that we were collectively guilty, that hate, there was something about American society that done this. Now, if, again, you believe, as I believe, that this was Oswald, a deranged, self-taught Marxist.
Yeah, then how do we get to national
self? Well, we get it because, because Dallas was a place of poisonous right-wing rhetoric. Even the day Kennedy was killed, Earl Warren mentioned it in his speech, the New York Times, But so the collective guilt helped darken the feeling about America. So Kennedy lives in my book, literally in my book, and there's no Vietnam War. I think, for instance, you would have had much more participation in things like a domestic peace corps. Because one thing that Kennedy did do, we haven't yet talked about the other part of Kennedy, the less admirable traits, but he did spark a feeling of civic engagement, particularly in young people. And with him being there for five more years, I think you would have had that, and you wouldn't have had Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground, bombs in the Capitol.
Jeff Greenfield, his book, If Kennedy Lived. Do you mention the Beatles in your book?
Yeah.
I've heard theories, and I didn't see this part, so you'll have to tell me, but I've heard theories that the Beatles might have been a popular band when they burst upon the scene in 1964, but nothing like the cultural phenomenon they became, because perhaps they were helping to fill such a void in the national psyche. You buy that?
The second part I do. I vividly remember the Beatles' first appearance on Ed Sullivan. It was, I think, probably 6 or 7 weeks after Kennedy's death, and I remember sitting in a college dormitory with my girlfriend. It was a fancy dorm, so they had TVs back then. And yes, there was definitely a sense of relief. On the other hand, if you realize how popular the Beatles had grown in Britain before Kennedy's death, I think it's a little much to say it wouldn't have happened. Clearly, though, they represented a giant break from weeks of really, gloom and darkness. Yeah. So, of course, I mean, I had Kennedy bring the Beatles to the White House, you know, and they, you know, the cartoonists would draw Beatles haircuts on JFK. You can imagine how that would have played out.
And it was a whole, it was a lighter thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's part of what I think almost impossible to communicate to younger generations is that because of what happened, coincidentally or not, in the 2 years after Kennedy's death, the shooting war in Vietnam, racial violence, generational, not a gap but a chasm, people began to look back at the early 60s and say that was just a better time. More optimism, lightness in the air, the crime rate hadn't begun to tick up in big cities. The racial conflicts were beginning over school integration and jobs and housing, but they weren't at the level that they got to. So that's part of it. You know, you think back on those times, and it's three-quarters of Americans back then believed that the government did what was right all or most of the time. Roll it a decade on, and three-quarters say no, they wouldn't, and we're still there.
Bob and Elizabeth, you're on WNYC with Jeff Greenfield. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Good morning. Don't you think it's very likely that if Kennedy had lived and was serving his second term, that his sexual scandals would have come to light and that that would have undermined his presidency?
Funny you should ask that, Bob. It's almost as if you've read the second part of my book. I do think that his sexual life would have been threatened with exposure. And in fact, it was. In the weeks before he died, a couple of reporters were very much on the case, particularly involving a suspected East German spy named Ellie Romisch, who was rumored to have dallied with the president. She came out of this group of women, party girls, that one of Johnson's aides, Bobby Baker, was supplying a congressman. Ellie Romisch was summarily deported by Attorney General Robert Kennedy. And so the way I deal with that in the book is to say that the Kennedys would have used, to use a popular expression back then, any means necessary to have kept that story from getting out. And when you realize that it, when it came to certain issues like the steel price hikes of 1962, the Kennedys used means that today would have been probably subjecting them to intense political outrage, if not impeachment. And so if you imagine they did that on a policy issue, yeah, the darker side of the Kennedys, even though I did work for Bobby and admire him greatly, comes out in my view. But yes, that would have been a mortal threat to his presidency.
So to tie some of this to today, you write about Goldwater's extreme politics in this book. With that much historical grounding, with all the historical grounding you have, do you see the Tea Party today as more a continuation of the extreme right wing of earlier in your lifetime or more a departure from it?
I want to be careful about extreme right wing. That's a term, you know, that sort of implies that they're no good. Clearly, Goldwater's foreign policy views were out of the mainstream for 1964. That's one of the reasons he got beaten in a landslide. Similar views by Ronald Reagan resulted in two landslide elections. But what I do think is the Republican Party, ever since the 40s, if not earlier, has been divided between a kind of more centrist, business-oriented Republican Party and what you might call a populist Republican Party, really suspicious of all things powerful, including banks and Wall Street. Mm-hmm. They're no friends of that. So I do think there is an evolution from the Goldwater movement to Reagan to the Gingrich Revolution and now to the Tea Party. And I think you have to separate out the elements of the Tea Party or any of those movements that are basically small government people from the genuine fringes that, you know, argue that Obama is not a real American and that, the Supreme – everybody who votes against them is a part of the surrender caucus. But I do think there is a link. And it really is, in its most simplistic phrase, a kind of populist feeling of the big shots are all against us and they don't respect real American values and we have to get them out. I thought it's really interesting that after the shutdown default crisis was averted, the rhetoric of some of the people who rejected this, we were stabbed in the back by our leaders. That is such a consistent view on the farther fringes of the American right. Stabbed in the back, that's how we lost China. Stabbed in the back by subversives in the government. Stabbed in the back by Republican accommodationists who won't fight big government. And in that sense, I think the Tea Party represents a continuation of that.
But with worse relations between the parties, worse relations even within the Republican Party than most observers say they've ever seen it.
Well, I think the difference is that up until relatively recently, the furthest fringes of the that group did not, in effect, control the Republicans in Congress. When you even Speaker Gingrich, you know, who sat down after the shutdown didn't work, and he and Clinton hammered out a welfare reform, a balanced budget. You know, they worked together fairly well. The difference now is that you've got a group of a few dozen Republicans in the House who – and they are, by the way, they are principled people in that they are doing what they said they were going to do. When they were running often in 2010, they would say, I'm not coming to Washington to legislate. I'm not coming to compromise. I'm coming to fight this inherently corrupt system that's destroying our country. And they, in effect, we'll see what happens in the wake of the default shutdown, basically drive the Republican conference in the House. That's different.
The Emmy-winning political analyst Jeff Greenfield, you know him from PBS, CNN, some of his other television work, and his new book, If Kennedy Lived, The First and Second Terms of President John F. Kennedy, An Alternate History. Fascinating. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will meet our brand new Chris Christie beat reporter, Matt Katz, who's coming here from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Stay with us.